Well, hello. My name is Arnoud Albersberg. I'm the founder of the Travel Health Group with the in Europe famous brand CarePlus. And today we launch our first Travel Health podcast. It's in honor of the World Malaria Day on the 25th of April. We think it's the right occasion to talk with some interesting guests about malaria, the mosquito, and of course it's all in our big goal that we want to eradicate malaria in 2030. Malaria is one of the world's deadliest infectious diseases, reaching over 435,000 deaths every year, mostly children under the age of 5. We think malaria is a preventable disease. If you don't get bitten, you don't get malaria. Apart from the fact that people die from malaria, it also keeps children out of school. It keeps families from investing in their futures and communities from prospering. It takes a huge toll on lives, livelihoods, and countries' progress. At the Travel Health Group, we started a buy one, give one program, meaning that every purchase of a CarePlus product contributes to the fight against malaria. And one of the things we do is sharing mosquito nets with local communities that need them, but also we support scientific research and education. And so that's what we want to talk about today.
Travel Health by CarePlus with your host, Arnoud Albersberg.
Bart Knols is on the line. And Bart, where are you at the moment?
At the moment, I'm in the Maldives, which is an island group southwest of India.
Okay, Bart, tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you are doing at the Maldives at the moment.
So, my name is Bart Knols. I'm a medical entomologist. So I actually deal with insects that are transmitting diseases to humans. Diseases mm-hmm. like malaria or diseases like dengue or Zika that people have heard about. And what I'm trying to do in my job is to find novel solutions to get rid of mosquitoes so that people don't get bitten and therefore don't get these diseases. And okay. What I'm doing here on the islands in the Maldives at the moment is to try and develop methods whereby we can actually eliminate mosquitoes from islands altogether so that you have a permanent solution to the problem of mainly dengue that is here in the Maldives, mm-hmm. So that people live without the risk of contracting dengue as a disease. But also, and I think everybody will appreciate that in the days of Corona, mm-hmm. that tourism, which is an essential source of income for the country here, sure. Which is now practically gone because of Corona. But the same thing could happen if we have a major outbreak of dengue, which is transmitted by mosquitoes. That would also kill tourism and therefore the whole economy here.
Okay, but it sounds like you're stuck at the Maldives at the moment, or not?
At the moment, the country should be commended. I think the government here has done an outstanding job so far because they've managed to reduce it to just 16 cases, and all of these have actually recovered. Okay. However, unfortunately, just in the last few days, 5 cases have popped up in Mali, which is the capital city, which is just on a small island where there's 130,000 people. So the risk of the disease spreading there is very high. Mm. And that's why, as of 6 o'clock today, we're going again into a full lockdown.
Okay. So you mentioned a couple of infectious diseases transmitted by mosquitoes. But I want to make a little leap to the malaria mosquito. That's probably not so much an issue at the Maldives, is it?
Well, it's actually really interesting because the Maldives, they had their last case of malaria back in 1984. So they've been free of this disease for quite a long time already.
Interesting.
And I think there's actually some interesting lessons to be learned from the way the Maldives got rid of this problem altogether, in that they had a very rigorous approach going from island to island, controlling the mosquitoes aggressively. at that time with insecticides that we are no longer using today, like the infamous DDT, but also doing a very stringent community outreach and having a lot of people involved in ensuring that there would not be breeding sites close to villages and close to houses where people live. And all of that combined led to the disease malaria going extinct in the Maldives. And as a matter of fact, on quite a few islands, they succeeded in eliminating the malaria mosquitoes altogether. So back in the beginning of this century, there was a survey that I did on 32 islands. And on 32 islands where there was malaria before, the malaria mosquitoes have completely disappeared. They have no longer found them. So that gives me the hope that when we're talking about the mosquitoes that are transmitting dengue and other viral diseases, that we can do the same, that we can reach the same and once and for all free these islands of this risk.
You know, you're talking about viruses transmitted by mosquitoes. We get a lot of questions this week, Bart, about coronavirus and mosquitoes. What do you think of that? Did you hear anything about it? Do you know anything about it?
Yeah, there is quite a bit of discussion on this at the moment. I think the general consensus at the moment is that the virus cannot be transmitted by mosquito.
Okay.
However, I think we should not go too fast. I think there's still research that needs to be done because obviously we have not been testing it against every mosquito that we know. We've just been looking at the survival of the virus under ambient conditions, and that may not be conducive, especially not in tropical conditions. So for now, we think that corona is not being transmitted by mosquitoes, which of course is good news.
Okay. Well, that's good news, I guess. And so back to the malaria mosquito. And I want to jump to Uganda with you because you have an interesting venture there, Twiga Ventures. What's going on there?
Yeah, I think the whole story behind Twiga Ventures, which is a social enterprise, is the fact that the bat net or the mosquito net that has been impregnated with insecticides has been shown to be one of the key tools in getting malaria down to really low levels in many settings around the world, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, where the free distribution of nets over the past, let's say, 15 years has resulted in a dramatic reduction in child mortality, particularly the children below the age of five, but as a matter of fact, in the overall population. So it is beyond any doubt that the bat net is one of the key contributors to all the success. As a matter of fact, it has been estimated that close to 70% of all the gains that we've had since the year 2000, which means more than a billion have been averted and more than 10 billion lives have been saved, that 70% of that success is contributed to the use of all these bat nets. Now, in many parts of Africa, the malaria situation is so encouraging that people are no longer really willing to use their nets. And so they're not sleeping under the nets, because nets are often very hot.
Yeah.
Or they start using
them for all kinds of things, right, Bart?
Yes. So they're using the nets for fishing. They're using the nets for washing lines, for bridal veils, for all sorts of purposes, except for sleeping under them to protect the children against malaria. So the idea that Twiga Ventures came up with is that, in essence, a white bat net, a white mosquito net, is basically an unwritten page, and you can print on that page. So we developed a technique to print on bat nets, which means that we can put anything you can think of, a text, a picture, a drawing, all sorts of things that we can put on a net to make that net more attractive.
Yeah.
And by making a net more attractive, what we're trying to do is to strengthen the sense of ownership of that net, so that people are less inclined to start using the nets for other purposes, but that they now feel really proud of the net that they have and are actually going to use it for the full duration of its lifetime.
Yeah, I have one here in the studio, Bart, with a beautiful butterfly on it. It's great. But I also saw Nelson Mandela and even a picture of Jesus printed on the net. So I can imagine that that really has value for the receiver of the net.
Absolutely. So the trial that we did in northwestern Uganda, where we had 2,500 nets that were printed with different images on them, we did a survey to try and figure out what pregnant women, what they liked in terms of nets. And indeed, as you just mentioned, a picture of Christ on a print of Christ on a net did really well. And I think the big plus of what we saw happening afterwards is that people really started to look after these nets. Mm. If you have a net with Christ printed on it, it can't be dirty, so people wash them nicely.
Okay,
if you
great.
Have a net with Christ on it, you know, you will not have holes in it. So whenever there were holes in a net, we saw that the women actually started mending them so that they are in full good condition, because you cannot have a print of Jesus on a net with holes next to it.
So that's awesome.
There are all sorts of side effects that we saw happening simply by putting a print on a net. And the latest piece of advice that I got from actually a preacher is a person that said, well, maybe a net like that with a print of Christ, maybe it can be delivered through the church and it can actually be a Christen before handing it out, so that strength of ownership, that strengthening thereof, is even stronger when it goes through the church. So I think there's lots of different opportunities that we have here, not just from the church side, but also for businesses. I mean, you can think of companies that would like to have their business logo printed on a net for all of their employees or for all of their clients.
Exactly. I have to break you up, Bart, because that's interesting, the last bit you told us, because that's exactly what we're going to talk about with our next guests, because we're doing outreaches through the Bambino Life Foundation now in Uganda. So we're going to talk to Ashaba about that. She initiated that, and that's great. So we had a couple of hundred nets already reached out in February. And our last guest, Bart, maybe you haven't heard that, but that's interesting because he's from the coffee industry. And so he's importing coffee beans. And the trucks with the coffee beans are full when they drive through the capital city, but they're quite empty to pick up the coffee. So we thought, why not put mosquito nets in the empty trucks, reaching out to the coffee farmers who live in malarious areas.
Exactly.
So, Bart, I have to thank you, and I wish you a lot of strength there in the Maldives. Thank you for your insights, and talk soon.
My pleasure entirely. All the best.
Travel Health by CarePlus.
Okay, we're moving to our next guest in our first Travel Health podcast, and that's Ashaba. Ashaba from Uganda. Introduce yourself quickly.
My name is Ishua Farida, and I'm a pilot, and I'm also the founder of Bambino Life Foundation, based in Uganda, East Africa.
Oh, wow. So that's great. You're a pilot. So you're actually flying commercial flights, or how do I see that?
Yes, currently I have a commercial pilot license, but I'm currently finishing up my training for multi-engine.
Oh, that's awesome. And that's a great achievement that you have become a pilot. But you're doing something much more important, Ashaba. You're also the founder and CEO of the Bambino Life Foundation. Can you tell us what that foundation is all about?
The foundation mainly focuses on promoting girl child education and empowerment in rural parts of Uganda, but also catering for the well-being or the welfare of children living in the streets or living in orphanages.
Okay, and what are projects that you have been doing so far with the foundation?
Uh, so f- So far, most of the projects that we have been doing have been centered around promoting girl child education and empowerment. And what we do is we go in rural areas and then we try to see some of the factors that stop girls from, you know, continuing with school or dropping out of school. So we go to different rural areas and then we train them in different hand skills so that, you know, they're able to sustain themselves. We are trying to promote a sustainable environment. And recently, what we have been doing is we also partnered with an organization called Care Plus. So we have been giving out also mosquito nets, because if the children are sick, they're not able to continue with their education. And what we put first is them being able to attain education.
Yeah, that's great, and thank you for that little bridge to the mosquito nets, because that's really interesting. Because in the orphanages where you have been, there were no mosquito nets present.
In the rural areas currently where we have been, not specifically orphanages, because in the rural areas we do get people from the area or from the society who are living, and then we come and we bring them in one place. Yes, there have not been many mosquito nets because most of the people cannot even afford to buy for themselves food. So the last thing that they're going to think about is buying a mosquito net, which is very expensive. And so you find most people are, you know, they don't have mosquito nets up. And one of the biggest factor that is happening in rural areas is, you know, people getting malaria. Yeah,
very, very true. We just talked to Bart Knols. He's in Holland, a famous entomologist, so he knows everything about mosquitoes and malaria. And he also said, well, it's very simple. If you don't get bitten by a mosquito, you won't get malaria. So the mosquito nets are a very important tool for that. And we're very grateful, Shaba, that you are helping us with outreaching to the rural areas and handing out the mosquito nets. And we also are testing something new, and that's that we put a print on the mosquito net. So what do you think about that?
I think that is the most incredible thing, because honestly, the first time I had that suggestion and that idea, I just knew that this is the greatest cause that I have to be part of. Because so many people use their mosquito nets for things that they shouldn't be using it for. You've had people use it for fishing. Some of the mosquito nets that were given out recently by the government of Uganda were so hard, you know, that you actually can't tear it with your bare hands. You need to burn it. So people were using them for multi-purpose things, like, you know, fishing instead. Yeah. They're using them to fish. Other people use them around their gardens in their, you know, seedlings or something like that. But a mosquito net with a print now brings a different, you know, it brings a different feel to it, because people are actually interested in having their mosquito nets up. And in rural areas, this is like a sound of someone is just going to show off, you know, they want their net to stay up so they can show off the amazing printer they have there. So I believe that is one of the most incredible ways to get people to actually use the mosquito net for its original purpose, and that is to prevent themselves from being bitten by mosquitoes.
Yeah, that's great. And so the people are more willing to put the net up in their homes. And
yes,
it's also great that you help them, that you educate them how to use the mosquito net in the correct way, because that's very important. And it's every time I hear it, what you were saying, that they use it for fishing or even to make a fence in their around their home instead of protecting themselves. That's really hurtful. And actually, because the nets are impregnated with an insecticide, if they go fishing, actually it's super toxic to fish. So they might fish a few fish, but the rest of the fish will die. So it's not not good. And it's great to hear that the feedback from you that the printing helps to keep the nets in the homes. That's awesome. And what are your next projects or outreaches in your agenda?
We were supposed to have an outreach probably this month, but because, you know, what is currently happening around the world,
mm-hmm.
Corona, and, you know, with our outreaches, it would have been more effective because we actually teach people how to make liquid soap. And that is something that is really important at this particular time. People need soap. But we cannot, because we require, most of the times we host about, you know, 400 or 500 people.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have, you know, this order of social distancing, which is very understandable, and people not meeting up and everything. So we are looking at after maybe that season to be able to have an outreach. But as usual, we shall be visiting some rural areas. And besides these people not having basic needs, because what we try to promote is we teach girls how to make sanitary reusable pads.
Yeah.
Because most of them cannot afford the disposable ones, which are very expensive. But also on the, if you're looking on the environmental side, you know, the disposable ones have materials that are not biodegradable, which take about, you know, 20 years. But the ones we teach them, cotton, within 3 months or 4 months, it has disintegrated in the soil. So it's mm-hmm. not that bad. So they sustain them, and we try to promote that development to sustainability. And that is why it was amazing when we were able to partner with, you know, Care Plus when it came to the mosquito nets,
mm-hmm.
because it added a lot to what we are offering, you know, these different people. We're not just offering them skills, but we're also offering them protection so they're able to go on with their day-to-day work, because malaria can be very fatal. You know that.
Yes.
And it can also be extremely fatal to young mothers or pregnant mothers, who are very many, by the way, in the rural areas, but they're not protecting themselves. And even those who have mosquito nets up don't really know how to protect themselves against malaria. You know,
mm-hmm.
what time should you put the net down? What should you clear? You should clear away the bushes, you know, drain the water around your home. So that is what we try to do. We try to give them the awareness.
Very good.
That surrounds malaria and how they should protect themselves before we actually give them the mosquito nets, so that they know that just having the net is not enough, but you also have to take an initiative on your side.
Absolutely. I'm really grateful that you put all that time in. And yes, the current situation is not helping, but let's hope that we can proceed with the outreaches as soon as possible. And if you need anything from us, let us know. And I thank you for being part in the podcast.
Oh, it's great working with you guys.
Okay.
It is really great. And I think we being able to help to reduce on the number of malaria cases in Uganda,
mm-hmm.
I think it's amazing. So it's a pleasure working with you guys.
Okay.
And it's a pleasure being on this podcast.
Thank you very much, Ashaba. And until next time, in better times. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. Thank you very much, Anod.
Travel Health by Care Plus.
So we're moving to our third guest in our first Travel Health podcast, Michiel Lampers, The Coffee Quest. Welcome in our podcast.
Thank you, Arnaud. Thank you for having me.
So, Michiel, please introduce yourself briefly.
Well, I'm Michiel Lampers from The Coffee Quest. And we are a green coffee exporter and import company.
Mm-hmm.
We supply green coffee to the American and to the European market. And me, together with my partner Friso Spoor, work in our Amsterdam office.
Okay, so you're actually importing directly from coffee farmers, or just trade? How does that work?
We export coffee from Brazil and from Colombia,
mm-hmm.
and we buy coffee there directly from coffee farmers, process it in our facilities, and then export it to the market from other places, like, for example, Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
We work together with partners who organize the local part of the supply chain with their own network of coffee producers,
mm-hmm.
And deliver us coffee where we need it and under the conditions we need it in. All the work we do is guided by our core principles, which are transparency, collaboration, and quality.
Okay.
Yeah, in that sense, we don't do the standard type of product. And yeah, this is also a very good example, the thing we're doing here together, of how a more standard a product can become special and worthwhile for people in producing countries.
Yeah, so thank you, Michiel. But maybe a bit off topic, but there's a lot in the news, apart from the health topics in the news at the moment, that the coffee price of the green beans is at the lowest level ever, and that is not a good idea for the coffee farmers, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So with your company, how do you approach that? Do you pay the farmers a higher price per kilo coffee, or how does that work?
Yeah, for the main body of the producers we work with and the products which we source, we pay fixed prices. Mm-hmm. Because overall the production price of producers doesn't necessarily vary together with the market price of product. Mm-hmm. Since most of the products which we do, or actually all products which we do are higher than standard in quality, they also deserve a price which is more stable and better than the market price, which is normally a price appointed to commodity level products.
Mm. Okay, so the interesting, or maybe a very bad coincidence, is that in the coffee producing areas, especially the Robusta areas, I understand, is that those are also malaria areas.
That's correct. Yeah, and to be honest, this is the first experience our company has with Robusta areas. Mm-hmm. Since before this, we have never traded Robusta before, because it is considered in general a more of a commodity type crop. Mm-hmm. But of course we are very interested in the product as coffee as well, because more and more specialty Robusta is hitting the market. Producers are developing themselves to produce better quality coffee, connect directly to roasters, and also have a more interesting background to provide a more interesting connection. Of course, if they want to develop something like this, they need the right partners, and they also need to be able to get a good price for their product. So this project, which we're doing in Uganda right now, is the start of that development.
Yeah, because the Robusta crop is growing at a lower altitude as the Arabica crop, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
So below 1500 meters.
Yeah, below 1500 meters, and that's exactly where the malaria mosquito is active. So, and now we're talking to each other because we want to join forces. And can you tell a little bit more about that? What you did from your end?
Well, yeah, I'm very happy with that. From our end, we do have clients which use Robusta type products, because it's an important product for many let's call it blend type coffees. Mm-hmm. For the taste perception of the consumer, it's also a very recognizable part of any coffee blend. Mm-hmm. The problem always is that it's very hard to get a Robusta product which is special in some sense, be it on taste or in terms of social impact. Mm-hmm. Because of the fact which I just already said, it's mostly treated as a commodity product. So since we have identified some need in the market for a better Robusta, mm-hmm. and for a more social Robusta, we set out to look for network for people who could collaborate with us to supply that, and for partners that could help us create the social impact which we want to bring. So of course that's when we started talking, Arnaud.
Yes.
Concerning the buy one give one campaign from CarePlus.
Mm-hmm.
in which you told me that you were looking for ways to create an impact with your campaign and to distribute the mosquito nets and get to the goal of achieving a malaria-free world in 2030.
Exactly. Very good.
And that's something we would like to help you with, and something we would definitely want to help the producers with. Because there's nothing as horrible as working all day in the hot sun for very little income, and then also being subject to one of the worst and most persistent health threats in current times.
Yeah, so yes. It's great that you are participating, because if I summarize really quickly because of the time, Michiel, it's that you have found or were looking for customers for this Robusta coffee from the rural areas. So you actually helped us by committing to buying that coffee from the coffee farmers. And that coffee will be transported with trucks to the capital city of Kampala in Uganda. But what we found out is that the trucks, when they drive to the rural areas, that they are quite empty. So it would be great to put mosquito nets in there. And you even managed to get help from the corporation to distribute the nets, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Our partner in Uganda,
mm-hmm.
Is the Large Scale Farmers Association, headed by Mr. Tony,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Tony Mugoya. And Mr. Tony also works with the Uganda Coffee Farmers Alliance, mm-hmm. which is an organization for cooperatives. So through the Large Scale Coffee Farmers Association, we have been able to link up with specialty producers, and through the Uganda Coffee Farmers Alliance, we have been able to link up with primary Robusta producing cooperatives in the greater Luero Nakaseke Nakasongola subregion. Excuse me for
wow.
that little in there, but it's quite a difficult name to
it
pronounce.
Is it is, and you did great.
Yeah, and that's in that sub-region, there's 24 primary cooperatives of mm-hmm. about 400 families each, which produce natural Robusta coffee. These are our partners through Mr. Tony. And with these people, we would like to move into the future to provide the European market with Robusta, and at the same time help the European market to provide the necessary assistance.
Okay.
To farmers through the project which we are working on together.
And just as a last question, can you give a ballpark number of farmers or even farmers and their families that we can help through this channel?
Yeah, it's approximately 10,000 farming families.
Family. So every family has, of course, more than one member. So we're actually talking about a lot of people that we can have impact with this project.
Yeah, we're talking about a lot of people. And I'm not quite aware how many family members one family counts. But yeah, anywhere between 20 and 40,000 people in that area who are connected to us through the production of coffee. I think that's a ballpark figure, yeah.
That's great. Well, Michiel, it's great that you are helping us with that. We really appreciate it. We're very thankful. And I hope to talk to you soon about the actual rollout of this project. Thank you very much.
That's great. Thank you so much for having me. And I wish you a great day.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Travel Health by CarePlus with your host, Arnoud Albersberg.
So, we're wrapping up our first Travel Health podcast with the topic of malaria and mosquitoes and our Buy One, Give One project. I want to take the opportunity to thank our guests today. And we started with Bart Knowles, entomologist, stuck in the Maldives, working on getting rid of mosquitoes there. After that, we talked with Ashaba Farida from Uganda, who is helping us with outreaches to distribute mosquito nets and also educating the local population. And our last speaker, our last guest was Michiel Lampers of The Coffee Quest, based in Amsterdam, importer and exporter of specialty coffee. And we're working on a really interesting project with them to get coffee out of the rural areas of Uganda and bringing back nets to the rural areas, and therefore protecting 20 to 40,000 people, which is great. That's the goal. And so we're wrapping up this first podcast. If you have any ideas how we can distribute more nets to the people that need them to protect them for malaria, just let us know on the regular chat channels and messengers and all of that. And thank you for listening, and until the next podcast.